Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on drug side effects when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural law when they put into our Constitution, in Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school that we conduct here at the law school twice a year. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about health side effects that are caused by drugs. All drugs are poisons, and in fact, I had a young pharmacist, I was going to say student, he's not a student, he's been out practicing pharmacy for quite a while, but he's a young man, in his 30s, and he said the first thing they learned when they went to pharmacy school was that all drugs are poison. Poison, P-O-I-S-O-N, you know, you put poison out to kill rats, you put poison out to kill coyotes. Certain poisons kill people. We try to avoid strychnine and arsenic. All drugs are poisons. And those poisons, when they're administered in small doses or regulated amounts, produce certain results. And these results are clinical results that doctors and psychiatrists and other health professionals are trying to achieve in people that have complaints about pain or depression or some other metabolic disorder. There's something wrong with your body. It isn't functioning correctly, and the solution is a pill. It's just that simple. We Americans all know that. We're taught that from early childhood. We can't understand why our children are buying crack cocaine from Joe down on the corner while we're all sucking up all the drugs, over-the-counter prescription drugs, and prescription drugs are just over-the-counter drugs that don't require a prescription. And, you know, we're in a drug culture here in America. We have a drug culture here. It's a nation of drug addicts. The nation is a nation of drug addicts. We approve of drugs and drug usage. The thing that we're opposed to is illegal drugs. Well, according to Moses, all drugs are illegal because all drugs, emanate from witchcraft, and witchcraft is a capital felony. And witches are the people in ancient times that used to make what we called the witch's brew. The witch's brew. Mind-altering drugs like psychedelic mushrooms or the TCP or TCH or whatever it is that you get out of marijuana or the cocaine, you know, that pure white powder that you get out of cocoa leaves and so on. And they'd work on that, and they'd brew up a batch, and then they'd go out here and they'd use it in their religious rites, typically, you know. Witches are religious people. Christians are religious people. Witches use drugs. Christians use drugs. I don't know which side is which, but you can make that up or make that out for yourself. Witchcraft, strictly prohibited in the scripture. But you don't find religious people in the United States opposed to drugs. They're just opposed to cocaine, heroin, and marijuana. Now, that same heroin, cocaine, and marijuana are all available from your local witch doctor. We call them MDs in this country. In Africa, they call them witch doctors. In other places, they call them witches. Here in this country, where they wear white coats and they have offices, and you go in and you want a particular brew, and you tell the guy, well, I was watching television last night, and there was this product called Vioxx, and I want some of that. Or there's this product on there, and then I'm not sleeping too well at night, and so I got to have this sleep aid. Or I'm really depressed, and I've got to have this pill to perk me up. The doctor, he prescribes this. They take it down to Osco Betry. The Osco druggist fills the order, and he pays his bill. Now, it costs about six times more to buy these legal prescription drugs than it does to buy recreational drugs down on the corner. And I asked a question in the last couple of programs. I said, you know, it looks like to me that the nation's gone insane. And insanity is defined in Webster's dictionary as an inability to cope, an inability to come to a conclusion or to solve a problem. And so people that can't solve their mental problems, they go to a shrink and he prescribes some drug, and the drug is an antidepressant or a pick-me-up or it's something. And we figured that we can conquer insanity with pills, that we can conquer any kind of a metabolic disorder with a pill, pain with a pill. Anything that comes up in life, there's got to be some medication, some drug, some witch's brew that'll solve that problem. Now, the bottom line is that that is not true. The bottom line is that all drugs are poisons. Poisons poison your body and kill you. And in fact, drugs kill at least 300,000 people a year, and that's what government and hospitals and the American Medical Association admit to. And they don't have any reason to raise the numbers, boys and girls. They have every reason to suppress them, and they do. The real numbers are double that, but let's just stick with the numbers that are official. You know, it's kind of like the Consumer Price Index. You know, when you go down to the store or when you go to buy anything, prices have increased over the past year somewhere around 10, 15, 20%, but the government tells you, oh, no, inflation's down around 3 or 4%. Now, you know they're lying to you. But you believe it and you accept those numbers, and that's the primary definition of insanity. That's why I said, I think the whole nation's gone insane. We're not suffering from stupidity or a lack of knowledge because this information is out there in the marketplace. I mean, I'm not reading to you from some secret journal from the Defense Department or something that the CIA developed over here or the FBI that I have spirited out of headquarters and I'm now revealing the secret information. Hell, this is in Reader's Digest. It's in USA Today, Wall Street Journal. It's on the 6 o'clock news. It's everywhere. It's available everywhere. And so we went through and we talked about ignorant and stupid and insane and foolish and numbskulls and so on. We discovered that ignorant, stupid, and foolishness doesn't quite meet the bill when we describe 300 million Americans and their addiction to drugs. I mean, it's an addiction. And furthermore, we believe in them. They don't solve our problems. For instance, in 1900, the cancer rate was 1 in 33. Today, it's 1 out of 2. President Nixon back in 1971 or 2 declared war on cancer. Not only is cancer more virulent than it's ever been, the drugs that are used to cure cancer don't cure cancer. And the doctors still tell you after 30, 40, 50 years of fighting this cancer thing, we don't know what causes it. We don't know how to cure it. And people line up to go in to take the treatments. That's a classic definition of insanity. Let me spell it out in a different way. Let's suppose that your car wasn't running very well, and you took it into Mr. Goodwrench. And you said, gee, Mr. Goodwrench, do you know what's wrong with my car? He listens to it. He says, no, I haven't got a clue. Well, Mr. Goodwrench, can you fix what's wrong with my car? No, no, I don't think I can. But I'll work on it. We charge $25 an hour, and we will work on your car until you run out of money. Now, if you accepted that kind of a proposal, we would say that's insane. It's not rational. It's not logical. It doesn't have any reason behind it. Well, can you explain to me why it is that millions of people go to their medical doctors who tell them plainly, we don't know what causes cancer. We don't know how to cure cancer, but we have a treatment, and for $100,000, we will treat you until you die or until your insurance runs out. There was a woman in the Bible that is mentioned. She came up to Jesus, and she touched the hem of his garment, and she was healed. And she said that she had told Jesus, you know, when the question came, it said, I've been going to the medical doctors for 11 years. They haven't cured me, took all my money, and I'm desperate. I don't know what else to do. And we get calls here at the law school. People will call here, and they'll say, well, now, Mr. Gordon, you say that there are 9 cures to cancer. Now, I have been to the doctor. I have tried everything. I've got chemotherapy. My hair fell out. I've been operated on. They've taken out nearly everything that I've got in my body, and nothing has worked. Now, can you cure me? And the answer is no, I can't. No. You see, your body can cure itself. Your body can heal itself. Your body has an immune system, but the chemotherapy destroys the immune system. And once you've destroyed your immune system, it's all over for you, partner. There isn't anything that anybody can do for you. Now, there's another factor that comes in that's totally irrational, but here's the way the game is played. You know, if the medical doctor comes along and says, If we can treat you for 5 years and put your cancer into remission, we call that a cure. Well, excuse me. You take your car in, it's got this knock in it, and you take your car in, and they put in some heavier motor oil, and the knock doesn't go away, but it diminishes quite a bit. I mean, the knock isn't as bad as it was, but it diminishes, and you get in your car, and you drive it around, and they say, and the mechanic says to you, if the engine in this car does not blow up in 1,000 miles, we call that a cure. We call that a repair. We call that a fix. I don't know. Now, that's totally irrational. You wouldn't buy that from a mechanic, but you buy that from your medical doctor, and that's why I'm convinced that Americans have lost their sanity. We saw this in the 1930s when 80 million Germans followed after this guy named Adolf Hitler. And people in Germany to this day say, well, see, it wasn't our fault. See, we weren't in control of the government, and therefore what went on wasn't our fault. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. Hitler didn't come to power without being voted for. He was voted into office. He was retained in office in every election, just like George Bush was voted into office and retained in office. And you people had to go out there and vote for him. I mean, even 30 or 40% of you had to go out there and vote for him. You know, it may not have been that 50 or 60% voted for George Bush, but a bunch of you had to give it any kind of meaning or legitimacy, to get even close to 50%. And people by the millions followed after Hitler. There was one meeting that he had, I think it was 1936 or 37, where they packed a million people into one big meeting where he spoke at a big rally. Hey, boys and girls, those people were suffering from a form of insanity, mass hysteria. We see it happens at soccer games, and people just go crazy, and they charge around, and they trample people down, and they kill each other. See, that's totally irrational. It doesn't make any sense. Now, people are constantly voting. You know that there are problems in government. People constantly go in and vote, although you know that your vote doesn't count, and you know that your vote hasn't accomplished anything, hasn't changed anything. You don't expect that it will, but you have been taught and trained all of your life that, well, it's an American thing to do. We go out and vote. It's kind of like eating hot dogs and hamburgers on the 4th of July and going water skiing up at the lake. It's the thing to do. It's the way you celebrate the 4th of July. If you stayed at home and had a turkey on the 4th of July, people would think you're weird. If on Thanksgiving you had hot dogs and hamburgers, people would think you're weird. But what difference does it make what you eat on Thanksgiving or the 4th of July? So we get into these habits, and we react. We don't act, we react. And we're taught and trained how to act and react in school, in college, in society. And taking drugs is a part and parcel of our culture. You got a headache? Take an aspirin. People carry these pills in their purse. You know, you could be sitting there having lunch with a guy, and the guy says, God, I got the splitting headache. His buddy Bob will reach in his coat pocket, whip out, you know, a little container of pills. They could be Advil or Tylenol or Anacin or whatever it is, and hand it to his friend. Here, I've got pills for headaches. Recreationally, you know, you go over to somebody's party, and the guy says, well, listen, I've got cocaine, I've got heroin, I've got marijuana, I've got Quaaludes, I've got ecstasy, I've got all these various and sundry drugs. Oh my God, this guy's wicked. This guy's evil. This guy is into recreational drugs. I can't understand the logic behind being down on cocaine and up on morphine. I remember I was in the hospital one time many years ago. I was shot, and they're doing a little surgery on me. And the doctor, Sansoni, came in, and he said, here, give this boy a shot of morphine. And he said to me, he says, you're going to like this. And he was right. Boy, I really like that morphine. That was good stuff. He came in a little later, you know, and he said, now, you don't want to take any more of this morphine than is absolutely necessary. So you tell that girl, that nurse, when you've got enough. And because if you don't and you get onto this stuff, you won't be able to get off and you'll become a heroin addict. So he warned me right there in the hospital. He said, you know, this is the place where we create heroin addicts. We bring them in here to the hospital, introduce them to morphine. And when the guy leaves here, he says, boy, I like that stuff. I'm going to go out on the street and I'm going to find me some heroin. So he warned me about that, and so I told that girl, I said, well, that was a pretty good hit the last time, but I think I'll pass, and I never took any more. It hurt a little bit, but, you know, I figured the pain's better than the withdrawal symptoms from heroin later on. So I never got off on that witchcraft thing back when I was a kid. Many people do, though. And, of course, people become addicted to these drugs, even these over-the-counter drugs, you know, like Rush Limbaugh. He was probably suffering some pain, goes into his doctor. The doctor says, here, let me show you this, Rush. Rush says, God, that was really good stuff. Now he wants more and more of it. Pretty soon the doctor says, look, I can't, you know, become your regular junkie, you know, I mean, your regular fixer for a junkie. And so Rush Limbaugh has to go out on the street to buy these pills. And by the way, many of these prescription drugs are available on the street from Joe the drug dealer down on the corner because they're so popular. And again, I can't help but point out that these drugs are poison. We're addicted to these poisons. The whole nation is addicted to these poisons. It's witchcraft and... hey, there are consequences that come from it. Now listen to this. Here's a little story here comes across. It's how a new policy led to 7 deadly drugs. And if you'd like to get a copy of the report, it's from www.latimes.com. Yeah, latimes.com. And it deals with how a new policy led to 7 deadly drugs. Now this is why I said to you that these aren't hidden away. These are reports that come out in your newspapers. Bob Schieffer puts it on the air. U.S. News and World Report and Time and Newsweek report on them. It's not ignorance. Now, you've been told, you know this. I'm not telling you something new. I'm probably going to give you some neat new views, statistics, and numbers that maybe you hadn't crunched together to come to a conclusion, but you knew that these drugs were poison. You knew that these drugs were addicting. You knew that these drugs were killers, and you went out and took them anyway. Now, for most of its history, the United States Food and Drug Administration approved new prescription medicines at a grudging pace. paying daily homage to the physician's creed, first do no harm. But in the early 1990s, the demand for AIDS drugs changed the political climate at the FDA. Congress told the Food and Drug Administration to work closely with pharmaceutical companies in getting these new medicines to market more swiftly. President Clinton urged the Food and Drug Administration leaders to trust industry as partners, not adversaries. Partners, not adversaries. So the FDA achieved its new goals, but now the human cost is becoming clear. Now, seven drugs approved since 1993 have been withdrawn after reports of deaths and severe side effects. A two-year Los Angeles Times investigation has found that the Food and Drug Administration approved each of those drugs while disregarding danger signs or blunt warnings from its own specialists. Then, after receiving reports of significant harm to patients, the agency was slow to seek withdrawals of these drugs from the marketplace. According to adverse event reports filed by the Food and Drug Administration, the seven drugs were cited as suspects in 1,000 deaths because the deaths are reported by doctors, hospitals, and others on a voluntary basis. The true number of fatalities could be far higher, according to epidemiologists. Now, I'm going to pause right there, and I'm going to tell you how low these numbers are. In vaccination reports, the doctors only report adverse reactions in 10% of the adverse cases. And that's about the same percentage as is reported here. So you can just take the numbers that you get here and multiply them by 10, and you'll probably have a correct number, but if you want to be conservative, just multiply them times 5. That'll give you half the real report. And that's because doctors get sued for medical malpractice when they make these kinds of errors. Doctors aren't dumb people, you know. They may be insane, but they're not dumb. Or as I pointed out, you know, the guy in the middle of the loony bin, he said, well, you know, I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid. I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid. Now, this inability to cope, the inability to solve a problem or to reason it through is an indication of mental illness. And remember that the people who suffer from mental illness are unable to see the mental illness in themselves, although these same people can see mental illness in somebody else. So you can go to your medical doctor, and he's prescribing these drugs that he knows are poison. And furthermore, some of his patients are dying from these drugs, and he goes out and he keeps recommending or prescribing these drugs to other patients, new patients, knowing full well that these drugs are dangerous. So there's only one of two conclusions. Either one, he's a homicidal maniac whose only concern is making money at the expense of dead bodies. Or he's insane, unable to rationally distinguish between these poisons and how they're used and why it is that he should stop using them, because they're causing harm rather than beneficial results. Those are the definitions. I gave these definitions to you from the dictionary. I'm not just whistling Dixie through a straw hat. Now, an adverse event report does not prove that a drug caused a death. Other factors, such as pre-existing disease, could play a role, but the reports are regarded by public health officials as the most reliable early warnings of danger, and the FDA's performance was tracked through an examination of thousands of pages of government documents, other data obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, and interviews with more than 60 present and former agency officials. These seven drugs were not needed to save lives. One of the drugs was for heartburn. Another was a diet pill. A third was a painkiller. And all told, six of the medicines were never proved to offer life-saving benefits in the first place. And the seventh, which was an antibiotic, was ultimately judged unnecessary because other safer antibiotics were available the whole time. Okay, now did you get that? Let me pause here for a moment, put another check mark here. Seven drugs killed 1,002 people. Not a single one of the seven drugs was a life-saving drug. One of them was a diet pill. Wasn't any need for it to start with. It's not as if the guy had a heart attack and we've got to thin his blood out or he's going to have another heart attack and die. These seven drugs that killed 1,000 people and were all withdrawn from the marketplace after FDA approval were taken off the shelves, not because that they were life-saving drugs to start with. Not a single one of them was a lifesaver. And again, we're getting into the realm now of this is irrational. Now, people believe in their doctors, and they believe in their priests. They believe in their religions. Medicine is a religion. The hospital is the temple where the doctor, who is the high priest, goes in to perform his witchcraft rituals of cut, burn, and poison, of witchcraft, of using drugs, strictly prohibited again by the scripture, which tells you not to make any cuttings or markings on your body. My God, you have to make cuttings and markings in order to cut out somebody's appendix, their gallbladder, or gallstones. Don't you? And you have to have some kind of a painkilling medicine over here, you know, like morphine or something like that, in order to deaden the pain so that you can stand the ritual. I mean, otherwise, you know, these rituals that are being performed on you boys and girls get real painful. Well, the seven drugs were not needed to save lives. One was a heartburn medicine. Heartburn. And then we turn around and find out my gut is killing people. Another was a diet pill that kills people. Third was a painkiller, like aspirin, it's killing people. All told, six of the medicines were never proved to offer any life-saving benefits, and the seventh, which was an antibiotic, was ultimately judged totally unnecessary because there were other safer antibiotics available. The seven are among hundreds of new drugs approved since 1993, a period during which the FDA has become known more for its speed rather than its caution. In 1988, only 4% of new drugs introduced into the world market were approved first by the FDA. By 1998, 10 years later, the FDA's first-in-the-world approval spiked to 66%. So in 1988, to get a drug approved, you know, 4% could get approved by the FDA, and now it's over 60%, 68%. And so these drugs that are being promoted by the pharmaceutical companies aren't being adequately tested. And so as you just saw with Vioxx as an illustration, they had 3 million people taking the stuff, 140,000 people had heart attacks, tens of thousands of people were killed. Now listen, wait a minute, you hear those words? Vioxx killed tens of thousands. How do I know that? Because there was another drug that was out, I've forgotten the name of it, it killed tens of thousands and you never heard the name. A guy wrote a book about it, it was a doctor, a couple of doctors, they wrote a book and said, my God, here's a drug killed tens of thousands of people. And the reason we know that is because that drug also was given to 3 to 4 million people. Now, it only kills about 3.4%, it's 3.4 people per thousand, or about 3.2, I guess it is, people per thousand. That's 3,200 people per million, and then you put 37 million people in the hospital. Can you follow that? Just read the numbers. Now, you can rest assured that Merck isn't going to come out and say, well, we would estimate that the number of people that died from the use of Vioxx is probably in the tens of thousands, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000, we don't know. 140,000 people had heart attacks, many of them died. Now, did you hear the words up here a little earlier? They said, well, just because you got an adverse reaction doesn't mean that it was the medicine that killed you. Well, the medicine sure as hell didn't save your life, did it? I mean, if you go to the hospital or if you go to your doctor and he prescribes a medicine and you die, isn't it pretty obvious that the medicine didn't save you? Although we couldn't say the medicine killed you, it sure as hell didn't save you. Okay, so it was unnecessary. Didn't help you. I know when people go in to get their flu shots, and here's some numbers that have been bandied about. It's nothing new. It's been around for a long time. You probably already know this. But if you get a flu shot every year for 10 years, it increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease by about, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 times. I've forgotten exactly. Maybe we'll see some more numbers in here. Now, I don't get flu shots, and I've never had one in my life, and I would avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But people line up. In fact, I've seen riots in hospital waiting rooms and lines where people have gotten into fisticuffs trying to get their shot first. That's insane. That's irrational. First of all, the flu shot doesn't prevent flu. Never has, doesn't now, never will. It's a gimmick for selling snake oil, mouse milk, and snake venom. It sells product. Doesn't prevent flu. And you know that as well as I do. See, the flu shot that you're taking now is based upon last year's flu virus, which has mutates every 6 months. It takes a year for that flu to become known, and then it takes another 6 months for you to make the flu shot. So you're talking about this avian flu. If you were watching Dateline about a week or so ago, you notice that 6 months into the epidemic will be the earliest that you can get a flu vaccine. But you see, after 6 months, it's already run its course. There isn't any need for it after 6 months. And you can't get the flu virus in advance because you don't know exactly what form it's going to take. Again, taking flu shots is totally irrational, but, you know, people line up by the millions to take them. Things that don't make sense and that people do anyway are irrational, and irrational is the definition or one of the definitions for insane. I don't want to dissuade you from getting your flu shot. In fact, they'll say, well, see, after you get your flu shot, if you don't get the flu, they'll say, well, see, it works. And if you do get the flu, they'll say, well, if you hadn't got your flu shot, you probably would have died, or you would have been even sicker. How do you know you would have been sicker? And how do you know that you would have died without it? These conclusions don't have any scientific basis. They don't have any basis in reason, logic, or common sense. People believe it. People line up for it. And that's the basis of the irrationality of it. That's why I pointed out to you, well, the only thing I can figure out is that the whole nation has to be nuts. Well, nuts is probably not the correct term, just insane, mentally unbalanced. Hang on a second. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that The Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about our school or about The Law Hour, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. And it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The law hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The law hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at area code 417-273-4967. All right, citing from the Los Angeles Times article, the seven drugs are among hundreds of new drugs approved since 1993. And the drug companies' battling average, or the batting average of drug companies in getting these new drugs approved, also has climbed. By the end of the 1990s, the FDA was approving more than 80% of the industry's applications for new products, compared with about 60% at the beginning of the decade. So they're approving more of the new drugs, and they're pulling these drugs off the market faster than at any time in history. I guess that makes sense. You know, you put 100 drugs on, 20% of them are bad, or they kill too many people. Now, they all these drugs have side effects, and all of these drugs kill you, but at a different rate. And they kill different people at different rates. And so if the rate is low enough, then it's acceptable. If the rate gets to be too high, then it's unacceptable, and they have to pull it off the market. So now, what is an acceptable rate of death, or death rate, and what is unacceptable? Now, the companies have prospered. The seven unsuccessful drugs that have been pulled from the market generated sales in the United States alone exceeding $5 billion before they were withdrawn. So the pharmaceutical companies put out seven drugs, killed 1,002 people, made $5 billion. Not bad, huh? Pretty good return. Now, once the world's unrivaled safety leader, the FDA was the last to withdraw several new drugs in the late 1990s that were banned by health authorities in Europe. Now, there's another irrational act. Now, let's suppose that we look over at Great Britain and we say, well, gosh, they just pulled this drug off the market over there because it killed too many Englishmen. And they don't pull it off the market if it just makes you sick, gives you diarrhea, or your hair falls out. It's got to kill you before they'll pull it off the market. And it has to kill people in numbers. It's got to kill a number of people before they'll pull it from the market. Now, after it has killed a number of people in Great Britain, it would seem like to me you don't have to be too smart to say, well, if it's killing Englishmen, it'll probably kill Americans, Canadians, and Australians. Now, this isn't your insanity that I'm complaining about. It's the insanity on the part of the FDA. Now, either one, they're insane, or two, they're homicidal maniacs seeking to kill people. I don't know which, but let's be intelligent people. Now, you've got a drug called Vioxx. You sell it to 3 million people, 140,000 people get heart attacks, tens of thousands of them die. And so you say, well, gosh, I guess that's unacceptable, so we'll have to pull that one off the market. But they continue selling the same class of drugs by other pharmaceutical companies, and the FDA doesn't say, well, gee, since it's killing Vioxx patients, well, these Celebrex patients and these other drugs that are being sold under other labels over here are probably killing people too, so let's pull them off the market. They didn't do that. They haven't to this day. I think they put a stronger warning label on there. You know, it's kind of like reading the Reader's Digest. I covered this for you back in January on iatrogenic disease, pointing out to you that, you know, if a drug kills a number of people, they'll pull it from the market. But they won't pull it from the market until it kills a bunch of people. And then they get a bunch of lawsuits. And see, what they're trying to do is to protect themselves against lawsuits. We all know that mercury fillings are made of mercury, and that the mercury is a deadly toxic neurotoxin, and that it causes problems in all kinds of animals, but we still put it in our dental amalgams. Let me ask you this. If mercury is a toxic substance, why would you want to put it in your mouth? Well, we're putting it in our mouths in quantities that are not lethal. That's the way we rationalize putting fluoride, a deadly poison, into our drinking water, or chlorine, which is a deadly toxic poison, and we don't put in enough. We put in enough to kill bacteria, so we know that it's a deadly poison, but it's not enough to kill a human being. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but these toxins build up in your fatty tissues over long periods of time. Has it ever occurred to any of you boys and girls out there that when you take in chlorine and fluoride over 20, 30, 40 years, that maybe you might develop Lou Gehrig's disease, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, breast cancer, or a whole host and plethora of other symptoms that we hang a label on, call it disease? Has that crossed your mind yet? Now, maybe you don't believe it, but I didn't ask you if you believed it. I just said, has it crossed your mind? Has any of the neural connectors in your brain connected up and said, oh my gosh, I wonder? And then has anybody ever done any studies that you could put your fingers on and say, oh my gosh? For instance, the average person over age 65, average, is now taking 6 drugs. You old folks out there, I'm 67. I'm not taking any drugs. I avoid drugs like AIDS, herpes, and VD at an office Christmas party. I'm telling you, boys and girls are killers. So I'm avoiding it. But the average, taking 6. My God, how many are some of the unaverage people taking? If I'm taking 0, the average is 6. Somebody must be taking 12. Now, boys and girls, have any of you people ever thought that when you're taking Tylenol and insulin at the same time, is there any kind of an interaction between insulin and Tylenol? How about insulin and bare aspirin? Well, you diabetics out there, how about insulin and any number of other drugs like Vioxx, Celebrex, or Prevacid, or something else? Well, remember this guy I told you about, you know, this druggist? He said, listen, one of the big things that they study when they go to pharmacy school is the interaction of the drugs. Now, the doctors do not study these interactions. Doctors go to medical school to learn how to prescribe drugs. They're drug dealers. Pharmacists aren't drug dealers. They're drug compounders. They're the witches that actually compound the drugs. And so he was sitting here across my desk from me, and we were chit-chatting a little bit, and I said, well, what about putting Celebrex with insulin? And he said, oh, my God, it's a killer. And that's why so many people are dying. See, they've got so many different combinations of drugs. Well, just take 6 drugs, and how many different combinations do you have? Isn't that 6 times 6, 6 times? Let's see if I can do that. 6 times 6 is 36. Okay. So if we took 6 times 6 times 6 times 6 times 6 times 6, isn't that 279,936 combinations? I think I did that right. Just take your Sharp EL1197G3 and just plug in. I'll just do it a second time here, because this pharmacist who is trained in compounding these drugs told me that there are so many toxic combinations of drugs out there that they don't even know how many there are. But you old people now that are taking an average of 6 drugs, I'm just going to do this. I got my finger out here. Here's 6 times 6. That's 1. Then times 6, that's 2. Times 6, that's 3. Times 6, that's 4. Times 6, that's 5. Times 6, that's 6. Okay, that's 279,936 toxic combinations, boys and girls. That's not rational. I mean, you know, you got this 84 million to 1 chance of winning the Powerball lottery. You know, you got to get 6 numbers all together. Now, you could take Vioxx, which is a killer drug even by itself. Now, here are 7 drugs here, and like Redux, Raxar, I'll give you the names of them. Here's Redux, Raxar, Prosecor, Duract, Resulin, and Propulsid. I'm gonna tell you the story here of them. But here's 6 drugs. These 6 drugs by themselves, if you were to combine them, you could get 279,936 combinations. And that doesn't even include the amounts that you could put in. See, you could put in 20 milligrams of one and 10 milligrams of another, and then you could alter the amounts of this drug, not just the combinations. And this pharmacologist, well, I call him a pharmacologist, he's a druggist. I guess he's a pharmacology. He's a pharmacology student anyway, at least. He said that there are thousands of drugs with thousands of combinations. Many of the combinations are known killers, just as deadly as taking arsenic and strychnine, mixing them up and taking them. Yeah, some of them are just absolute killers. I remember my Uncle Carol, he was a druggie. He was an alcoholic, and he used to take pills also. And, of course, no doctor did this to him. The doctor prescribed certain pills. I don't know what the combination or what the pill was now. But he was taking these pills. And the warning label tells you, do not drink alcohol when you take these pills. And my Uncle Carol, he's an alcoholic. And so he's taking these pills, and they really make him feel good. You know, and so he's drinking and drinking. One day he's walking down the street, fell over dead, age 30, from a heart attack. Now, he was killed by prescription medicine. No doctor was ever sued. No pharmaceutical company was ever sued. He was a victim of prescription drug therapy. Died at an early age. Brought it on himself. He went to the doctor and said, hey, I'd like to have some of them pills. And the doctor said, well, I'd like to sell you some of those pills. I'm a drug pusher. And so the combination of the alcohol, which maybe the doctor didn't know and didn't warn him about, but you know, after it was over, my grandmother told me that he had been warned by his doctor not to drink and take those pills. I guess you could take the pills if you didn't drink, And then I guess after the pill wore off, I guess you could drink and then don't take the pills. And then if you want to take the pills, then you have to stop drinking or some combination. But evidently he thought, well, a little of this and a little of that and a little of this and a little of that. And pretty soon, you know, the guy dies. And 300,000 people a year are dying here in the United States, just like my Uncle Carol. And they're dying from things like redux. Now, once the world's unrivaled safety leader, the FDA, has now become the last to withdraw several new drugs in the late 1990s that were banned by health authorities in Europe. Are you prepared to say that the health authorities of Europe are dummies and they don't know what they're talking about, and that our FDA over here leaves them on the market for Americans to continue to consume because the Europeans are stupid and they're just a bunch of worrywarts that don't know what they're talking about? Is that what you're thinking? Because, you know, the Europeans and the Canadians are pretty knowledgeable people when it comes to drugs. For instance, I saw the other day that in Canada, you can get drugs in Canada for about half what you pay in the United States. And so the pharmaceutical industry went to Congress and said, no, we don't want people going across the border to Canada and buying these drugs on the internet. And the pharmaceutical industry, you know what they tell you? Well, we're just concerned about you old folks out there because you're obviously stupid and incompetent. Buying your drugs up in Canada is dangerous. Do you know why buying drugs in Canada is dangerous, according to the pharmaceutical industry and according to Congress? It's because we can't ensure the drug purity that come from Canada. Okay, so you Canadians up there are a bunch of filthy pigs, and you can't produce pure drugs. Excuse me, but don't you Canadians also take Vioxx and Redux and Razar and all these other drugs? And by the way, don't you manufacture those drugs up in Canada? And isn't Canada one of the industrialized nations of the world, you know, one of the advanced industrialized nations of the world? I could see the argument, if you were buying your drugs from Haiti or the Dominican Republic, yeah, I could see the logic behind that, that those drugs produced in those third world backward countries, those dirty cesspools, might not be too pure. And you're going to say that, though, of France, Germany? You're going to say that about Canada and Australia? Remember, I said, boys and girls, I think somebody is losing their minds. And I think you'd agree with me that Congress and the pharmaceutical industry are acting irrational here when they tell you that drugs that come out of Canada at half the cost if they come out of America. Let me ask you this. What if they charged you twice as much for the drugs coming out of Canada? Do you think that they would complain about that? You know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out that the pharmaceutical industry goes to Congress to get the kibosh put on buying Canadian drugs because they don't want the competition. They don't want you people buying drugs at half price in Canada. They want you to pay twice as much here in the United States. And that's just business. It's nothing personal. Nothing personal, just business. Now, the FDA's faster and more lenient approach helped supply pharmacy shelves with scores of new remedies, but it also has also yielded these fatal missteps, according to documents and interviews. Well, 10 months ago, the FDA administrators dismissed one of its medical officers' emphatic warnings and approved a drug called Lotrinex, L-O-T-R-O-N-E-X, a drug for treating irritable bowel syndrome. Lotrinex has been linked to 5 deaths and the removal of a patient's colon and other bowel surgeries, and it was pulled off the market on November the 28th. Number 2, the diet pill Redux, approved in April 1996, despite an advisory committee's vote against it, was withdrawn in September 1997 after heart valve damage was detected in patients put on the drug. The FDA later received reports identifying Redux as a suspect in 123 deaths. Number 3, the antibiotic Rexar, R-A-X-A-R, was approved in November 1997 in the face of evidence that it may have caused several fatal heart rhythm disruptions in clinical studies. FDA officials chose to exclude any mention of the deaths from the drug's label. I wonder why. I mean, if you picked up a drug and it said on the label, this drug killed 123 people, use it wisely, what would you think of that? Let me tell you, as a manufacturer and as a salesman and as a businessman, I would not want to put on the label of my beds or on my furniture that this furniture is dangerous to your health. In fact, you know, when you have a toy or something that has killed 4 or 5 toddlers, infants, or babies, we take it off the market. We have some product liability suits, and that's what's happening here. These 123 deaths from Redux come from 123 lawsuits, and 5 up here from this Lotrinex are 5 lawsuits. Rexar, suspect in the deaths of 13 patients, there's 13 more lawsuits. These are wrongful deaths. Boys and girls, they're not telling you about the people that died from Rexar, Redux, and Lotrinex, who the doctor succeeded in getting buried, like my Uncle Carol. They're not telling you about those. And furthermore, you know that. I mean, if you've got any reasoning ability or capacity left, and your neuroconnectors are firing on, you know, 3 or 4 cylinders, you can figure that out. Blood pressure medication is called Prosecor. It was approved in June 1997, despite findings by FDA specialists that it might fatally disrupt heart rhythm and interact with certain other drugs. Remember that interaction with certain other drugs, posing potential severe risk. Prosecor was withdrawn 1 year later, report cited as a suspect in 100 deaths. The painkiller Duract was approved in July 1997 after FDA medical officers warned repeatedly of the drug's liver toxicity. Senior officials sided with the manufacturer in softening the label's warning of the liver threat. The drug was withdrawn 11 months later. By late 98, the FDA had received voluntary reports citing Durect as a suspect in 68 deaths, including 17 that involved liver failure. The diabetes drug Resulin was approved in January 1997 over a medical officer's detailed opposition and was withdrawn this March after the agency had linked 91 liver failures to the pill. Reports cite Resulin as a suspect in 391 deaths. The nighttime heartburn drug Prolapsid was approved in 1993, despite evidence that it caused heart rhythm disorders. The officials who approved the drug failed to consult the agency's own cardiac specialists about the signs of danger. The drug was taken out of pharmacies in July after scores of confirmed heart rhythm deaths. Overall, Prolapsid has been cited as suspect in 302 deaths. More than likely, it's thousands of deaths, but then we don't know. See, we only know of these 302 lawsuits that are being prosecuted. So you got 302 complaints. Most people never complain. Most people never know, never suspect, never believe that they've been the victim of drug dosage or iatrogenic disease. Not that they couldn't know, shouldn't know, haven't read about it, or totally ignorant. It's that we don't want to believe it. It's totally irrational. After all, that's the definition. Irrational is the definition, or one of the definitions, of insanity. Unable to connect the dots. We put the dots out. We give you a pencil, unable to connect the dots. That's the problem. All right, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to buzz off and take this up a little later, talking about this thing of drug side effects. Drug side effects, they're killers. So let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.